Happy Easter.
Ish.
Ish. Well, it's tomorrow.
We pride
Friday yesterday.
We pride ourselves on blinding accuracy on this show. There's no gray areas. We got to get it right or not say it at all.
And hey, y'all, it's Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. You know what? It feels like spring is here. Things are getting better. Things are opening up. Heard a question they were bringing somebody on the, I guess it was Fox News. You know, I check out a few of the news channels before I do the show early in the morning. And the question was, is it safe to fly? Wonder, is there something wrong with the jets? You know, the aircraft, is the aircraft fuel gone bad or something? Because I've already flown. If you're asking about COVID, I don't think that's an issue. Yeah, it's safe to fly. The problem's going to be airlines keeping up as more people are wanting to fly and expanding routes and adding that back. So a lot more to talk about today. It's a financial show, so we're going to talk about your money. And you're going to give some direction to the show because we're going to have callers call in and ask questions. And you can do so by, for the newbies out there catching this show, we're on for 3 hours. We just cranked up for the morning. We do this every Saturday. Some of you will be leaving us because the station's moving on to other things, and others will be joining us throughout the morning. So you can call us at 504-260-0995. We're going to talk about one of your favorite topics, Social Security. We're going to talk about investing, the 50-50, fear of the stock market, some history of it, net unrealized appreciations on our list today. We've got clips to play. Also, the Winning at Life app is a way to connect and become a part of the Winning at Life Nation. You can text, email, call the show through the app, stream audio. If you have to move away from your radio, you can stream the audio as well as we're live streaming. You can watch the show. Hey, everybody out there that's already joined us. Easy way is, you know, that social app called Facebook. Yeah, we're streaming on Facebook Live as well as other platforms. So it's real easy. Go to the Winning at Life Facebook page, Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, or my page, Gregory Ricks, and I'm about to share it over and get it going. I usually do that right before the show, but not done that yet. Hey, James, how's it going today?
Going pretty good. I don't know if the guy that's listening to us was paying attention, but there is one platform that Gregory did not mention because we are no longer on it as of Thursday.
What platform?
Periscope.
Oh, it merged or whatever.
It got phased out, and so we're flat out on Twitter only in that universe. It used to be Twitter and Periscope were some sort of hybrid because Twitter had bought Periscope. And then they phased it out, and so now at Gregory Ricks, if you're a Twitter person. But I looked at the I looked at the numbers. There's only about a 20% chance that you, not Gregory, but the guy listening, there's only about a 20% chance that you actually have a Twitter account that you use on a regular basis. But for the 1/5 of our audience that applies to, they apparently use Twitter a lot. So find us at Gregory Ricks on that platform as well. A couple things I got to get you caught up on before we get into the financial news of the week. Number one is the next webinar starts on Monday. This is the No Compromise webinar, and this is Gregory's brought in some guests to help him sort of co-host the No Compromise webinar. It's a couple of authors, and they've written a book that goes in a little bit more depth about what they're going to talk about on this webinar. And the No Compromise is no compromise against what? No compromise against overthrowing the government, or no compromise against beating the Falcons in the NFC South? Or no, it's no compromise when it comes to taxes.
Yeah, settling for more taxes? No.
All right, so I haven't seen this webinar. I haven't seen a script. I haven't even seen an outline. So tell me what's going to be in this. What's this all about?
This is about getting to zero. This is about thinking differently about taxes and what's coming. And there's areas out there that you don't commonly think about. And it's not just for the wealthy, not just for the business people. They have opportunities as well. But what this takes is planning. And one of the things, don't put all your assets in pre-qualified account, like deductible IRAs or the traditional 401k. Because I sit down and talk with people, and you know, whether it's a few hundred thousand or 2-3 times that, and having all their money there. Now, can they do something about it if they plan? Yes. But otherwise, every dollar they take out is going to be taxed as ordinary income. So when you know taxes are going up, in the future, and it's set right now. There is an increase built in for everyone. It happens in 5 years, and it's the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that was passed early in Trump's administration. That was a temporary tax. It had an 8-year life, something the like
sunset
that.
Sunset clause, yeah.
So it reverts back, meaning standard deduction goes back to what it was. The tax brackets go back to what they were. So it essentially is a tax increase for everyone. So knowing that's coming, and if you're planning whether retirement's 40 years from now or 10 years from now or 3 years from now, if here's things that affect your retirement. Inflation, things going up, because if, say, you're on a fixed income or finite, that pension or this block of assets is going to take, you know, say, based upon 3.5% or 4% income stream. But if price things go up that you need, that shrinks what your money can do. The other thing that we're more worried about is taxes going up and shrinking your disposable income. So if we, and if you think of, say, you're on a, and just call this, for most people fall in somewhere around 10 to 20% tax bracket. So if those go up 2, 3%, you know, that's going to be impactful, especially the standard deduction reducing. That's impactful as well. But what if you could shift half, and if you don't have any of your income position to be at zero, what if you shifted half over time, shifted half your income where, it, for example, hypothetically, it's not taxed? You know, that is a big impact. You know, that's, call it, say your retirement income overall is going to be about 4K, you know, combining everything as an example, and half of it, you could work your way to where it's going to be like zero. So you're talking about freeing up a few hundred dollars a month of extra money that otherwise was going elsewhere. So this is the type of thinking we're trying to get to and help. And we have reports and analysis that we go through whenever we talk with somebody in my day job. Regardless of what you're doing out there, whoever you're working with or talking to, you should be having this type of conversation. If you're thinking about who do I work with? I need help with all this. Well, you need somebody that's going to look into the future, because that's what financial planning is planning for what's coming, not about what's in the past, but what's coming. And you should be having a tax discussion. You should be having a tax analysis. So whether you're thinking of like, I've got to find some help, or I'm unhappy and wanting to change, or if you're going for that review, they should be asking for the 1040. They should be providing an analysis and looking for ways to help. Don't just go in there and say, well, yeah, how's my return? Oh, return's good, right? Okay, cool. If that's all it's about, there's so much being missed there.
All right, so the schedule for this starts on Monday, and Gregory spread it out to where there is a morning webinar on Monday at 9:30. There's one during lunchtime on Wednesday, and there's one in the evening at 6 p.m. on Thursday. So somewhere that should fit into your schedule. If you're interested in this tax webinar, go pick out which one of those days actually fits for this week coming up, and then register for it, and then you don't have to think about it again. You're going to get an email before the webinar starts. It's a link that you click. It pops up on your screen. You sit back, relax, and learn a little bit more about some of these tax strategies that Gregory was just talking about. Another thing I have to get you caught up on before we get into the financial news here is updates on Gregory's Baton Rouge office, still set to open the first week of May. I guess technically that would be like May 3rd, something to that effect.
Yeah, I believe the calendar says May 3rd is a Monday.
Yeah. So that's still happening in the works. And if that's the only thing that's been keeping you from coming in, you have one less excuse now. Get your financial house in order. But it's something people have been asking for. You know, Gregory has clients, and we have callers to the show like in the Gonzales area or in Gramercy or further up there, Denham Springs. Hey, when are you going to get an office in Baton Rouge? Well, it's about to happen, and it's going to happen now in less than a month. I guess technically the first appointment could happen a month from today. And also, we'll talk about this later in the show, but the Cancer Crusaders golf tournament that's coming up. We're going to replay when we get a chance interview we had with Jackie Hughes from the Cancer Crusaders for their 14th annual charity golf tournament. You're going to hear the story about the guy that the tournament's dedicated to. It's named the Mark Mitchell Memorial Tournament. And then the guy, Vic Hughes, to whom this year's fundraiser is dedicated. You'll hear both of those stories, but it's also a good way to play golf, cure cancer. Those are all pretty good things, right? Mickey in Houma, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Mickey?
I'm wondering, can you roll over pre-tax dollars into an annuity and only pay the taxes on the income? In other words, can you roll over 100% of your pre-tax dollars?
Answer, the quick answer, simple answer, yes, you can roll over 100% of your pre-tax dollars. For example, if it's a 401k or type of company plan account that's all pre-tax, you can roll that over into an IRA annuity. So it would just, the annuity would be classified as an IRA, but in that IRA can be that annuity, or it's titled as an IRA annuity, but that money can roll over into that. Everything stays tax deferred or pre-tax, grows tax deferred. And when you start taking distributions, you'll be taxed on what you take out at that point. Do you have a follow-up question on that, Mickey?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
Oh, real easy. Thank you, Mickey, for calling.
All right. You know, when I hear situations like Mickey, that sounded like sort of a vague question, like he's taking a pop quiz on finances and he just needed the answer to question 28. But I have a feeling that that hypothetical is very specific to Mickey's situation. Mickey has a bunch of pre-tax income and he wants to get in a fixed annuity.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of variable annuities because it's like it's a more expensive form and carrying risk. So I can't find reasons to do that. But on the fixed side, typically when that question comes up, somebody's looking, and fixed means there it is not correlated to risk, meaning downside risk. On a fixed product, it could be correlated, or how does it grow? Could be through interest rates, or you could link it to indexes that get you the upside of the market. But fixed means you're not exposed to downside. A variable annuity essentially has mutual funds inside of it that the money can go into and give you upside of that as well as downside of that. Yeah, they have variable with fixed interest options in it, but generally when you see variable for variable annuities or variable life, you're exposing yourself to risk and additional fees. So when you think of, say, a fixed indexed annuity, what are the fees? Zero, most of the case, unless you're adding an income rider or something like that. Otherwise, you're at zero. On a variable, you probably have fees that are ranging from 2 to 4%. So why would I want to put an expensive wrapper around my money? So I'm starting negative every year because of the fees built in. So from a fixed standpoint, and here's something I'll share from you from the standpoint, because of part of the invest 50-50 philosophy, we believe one of the asset classes should be fixed indexed, and annuities are a great place to utilize that. Hand the risk off to the insurance company, have a portion of your money there. And I like participation rate is my preference, and I'll explain that. And I like 1-year resets. Participation rate is you're not typically depending on the index. You're going to get a percentage of that index. Sometimes it's all of the index. Sometimes it could be a bit more than 100% of the index. But like on the S&P 500 examples I kind of go with, is typically we like a 50% par. You're not going to get the upside, all the upside on that, but you're not getting any of the downside. And let me give you this example here, because this is news just in, because we just ended March, the first quarter of the year. But let me round it this way. In the last 30 years, the best 12-month performance for the S&P 500 occurred over the 1-year period ending Wednesday, March 31st of this year. Yes, best in the past 30 years, the S&P 500 gained 56.4%. And if you had a fixed indexed annuity with a 50% par rate, meaning no risk to grow your money, your account, and there's no fee, your account just locked in 28.2% gain over that 12-month period. You know, it's like if you had 100,000, it grew, I'm going to do some rounding here, but it grew, you know, close to $30,000. 100,000 just became 130,000. And if it's a 1-year reset, what does reset mean? It locks in the gain. Each year, whatever it grows, it locks it in. And then you go again for the next year. So we're seeing some pretty neat things on statements, especially when you have a number like that S&P came in over the 12-month ending. And you said, like, what? How did that happen? Well, remember what happened March a year ago? Pandemic, shutting down the country, worrying about how many was going to die, which is important. We had a major problem that we're still dealing with. That's why we're all wearing masks in case somebody woke up yesterday. And what has been going on the past year? So the market really tanked at the bottom of March. And so what you're seeing is the 12 months since then climb out. How about the timing of that? 56.4%.
And speaking of climbing out of it, the jobs report yesterday was good. Not great, good. Unemployment fell 0.2% to 6.0.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot all about that because it was a holiday, which was strange. They had that news released anyhow on a holiday. Like they didn't have that on Thursday. Market would have really loved that report.
Maybe Jeff over at the Bureau of Labor Statistics is an atheist. Doesn't count this as a holiday. But yeah, it was 6.2% for February. The March number, 6.0%. But when we look at what was the March unemployment rate for 2020, just 1 year ago, 4.4%. So we're not quite back down to that great number. But Gregory, closing this gap in that last 1.5% is going to be much harder than it was bringing down that first 8-10% of unemployment.
Oh, absolutely. This is where it gets slower on the pace of getting back to four. And I'd say it's going to take a while. But, you know, we were there not long ago, in fact. But you're not going to see leaps and bounds at this point.
No, February 2020, we were at 3.5%. When we get all the states open, will we get back to that number? I doubt it. That's just an incredible number. Peggy in New Orleans, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Peggy?
Yes, I'm just trying to figure out. I have a lot of J.P. Morgan Chase stock that I inherited from my parents. And is there any way for me to sell that stock and pay less or pay no tax to it? It's going to be, I guess I would imagine if I sell the stock, it's going to be considered ordinary income and I'd have to just pay tax.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit. When did they pass away?
Mother in 2001, Daddy in 2005.
Okay. Now, did mother inherit all of that stock from her husband?
No. Okay. No. They years ago, they had both bought stock in, it started out being Mellon Financial. Remember them?
Yes, absolutely.
And it just changed hands over the years.
Well, here's what you have for each of them. There's a step-up basis for the stock. So, meaning when he died in 2005, I'm gonna give a hypothetical number. If he bought that stock at $5 a share and it was worth 50 when he died, who's inheriting it, if that's you stepped up to that $50 value. So if you sold it at 50, there would be no tax. It's the same situation for your mom on death. For her, that stock value is stepped up to the current value. And if you sold it, it is not a taxable event if it's non-qualified after-tax account. If it's an IRA, there is no step-up basis inside of IRAs. It's still going to be taxed as ordinary income. Yeah, I was just looking at that J.P. Morgan stock price going back 5 years was in the $50 range, and we saw it close up about 1% yesterday, and it closed at $153.71 a share. So
nice.
I actually think that when they got the stock, I think they paid like $38 a share for it.
Yeah.
So
no surprise there. So it's really at a good price. I was, you know, looking at one of my technicals where it had a buy signal back in November, and it's worked its way up nicely in this year, and even over the last quarter, it's done well. So you're really at a nice high from that standpoint to take an opportunity to sell that. It's at a great historical place. So if you were looking to take advantage of and get those taxes
correctly,
knocked out.
What you're telling me is I'm not going to have to pay tax if I sell this off?
Well, once again, the step-up basis depends on when death happened. Like for your dad, you said he passed in 2005. Well, it was at $50 a share. So if he bought it
April
at 30, so if he paid 38 for it, you have a step up to that value at the death at that time. line. And I would think that was kind of handled back then, but if it wasn't, if that account's still sitting in his name, that's still not been resolved. For your mom's case, her value, if she died this year, you know, we're talking about a neighborhood of $150 a share of current value. And if she bought it at 38, that step up moves up to that. But what you need is having information. You know, if she's got a recent statement, you know, you want to show those values, and that's how that's done and recorded. And you have to show justification of that. There's, you know, a little bit of paperwork on the tax returns to do and such as that to verify that. But stocks have a step up basis, and real estate. So if they've had a home that's being left to others, one thing you need to get is an appraisal on that home right now. If she's leaving a paid for home, or just leaving a home to you or somebody else, an appraisal gets you that step up basis on the real estate as well.
Now, is this part of the step up basis that was in Joe Biden's tax hike plan that he released this week? Wasn't there like an exemption? They're going to start taxing capital gains at death and with a $1 million exemption, something to that effect?
That's what they're talking about. You know, that's not fleshed out. That's kind of the part one presentation the other day, and part two's coming. A lot of work to get through on that, but that's what they're talking about is altering capital gains tax, then also altering or eliminating the step-up basis as well.
Well, that's overall more good news than bad news for our caller there, Peggy. But if you want to be next, 504-260-0995, 504-260-0995. Did you want to step into that Biden tax plan? We talked about that on Wednesday and Thursday show. I think most people are kind of caught up on it, but we got to do a little bit of coverage here for the Saturday version. This is a $2.25 trillion spending package, but that's not what's going to affect you directly. Those are indirect effects. You're going to be affected by some of these tax increases. Some of these we have been talking about for weeks because they were rumored about, and since there was no big public backlash, they made the final cut, and that's things like raising the corporate tax rate from 28% to 21%. Rolling back some more of President Trump's tax cuts. Gregory, you had mentioned the standard deduction and the tax brackets could be going up, but he says, no, that's only for people making more than...
Well, it's already baked in the cake. The taxes are going up. Now, could he accelerate? And he might not want to do that, because then that would be on him. He doesn't get the blame for taxes going up in a little over 4 years, 5 years from now, 4 years from now. It's already baked in. It's going up. He doesn't have to affect everybody. Right now, he could focus on the story of households of 400,000 more. But it's that's yet to be seen, because typically when they put that out there, more are being affected. And they pretty much look at 90% of the people when it comes down to that, say, well, it's the wealthy. Well, they look at most of you as wealthy. And when you think it's, and here's the error most people make, is they think it's somebody else, like it's James, Gregory going to be taxed.
It's a corporation.
It's just old Fred next door. We don't have much. No, they're talking about you as well.
Man, even if you have nothing and they raise the corporate tax rate from 21 to 28%, that's a 33% increase in the tax hit for corporations. Are you just begging for everything you order from Amazon to be more expensive? Is that what you want? You want every time you go to Walmart or Rouse's, a grocery store, a retail store, these are all corporations. You want everything to be more expensive? Is that what, I mean, there's no shortcuts here. Either there's less service, less quality, or a higher expense. They love raising the corporate taxes, though.
Yeah, so it's a $2 trillion infrastructure package that they're going to roll through reconciliation, and we can talk about that as well, but spending over the next 8 years would raise corporate taxes, James said, to 28% to fund it is the strongest part. The proposal would add $621 billion into transportation infrastructure, such as bridges, roads, public transit, ports, airports, and more. A direct $400 billion to care for elderly and disabled Americans, inject another $300 billion into improving drinking water infrastructure, $300 billion into building and retrofitting affordable housing along with construction, upgrading schools, $580 billion in American manufacturing research and development and job training efforts. Most of that actually has to do with the green shift right there.
Didn't we fall for this 10 years ago? Half of those companies went out of business. The other half took their billions, ran off, and merged into somebody else. I mean, this already failed 10 years ago. And that was $580 billion, you said, for those green projects? That's bizarre. How on earth is that stimulus stimulative to the economy.
Yeah, among the administration's goal is they want to revamp 20,000 of miles and roads and highways and repair 10,000 bridges. It also calls to build a national network of 500,000 electric vehicle chargers. Well, who's paying for the electricity? I'm a little confused. Does the government set up gas stations and all for everybody to get fuel? Now, the government's being responsible. I thought Elon Musk and Tesla's been doing a pretty good job. They're not everywhere. And once again, when I go to the gas pump to refuel my car, I'm like, what does it take me? All about 5 minutes, mm-hmm. maybe less. And then I'm on my way. You're not charging a vehicle that fast. And I don't know. I think the free markets, capitalism should take care of that part of it. And the other part is, oh, by the way, those electric cars, you know what it costs per gallon of gasoline for do you know how much you're paying in taxes? What is it? 40 cents, 50 cents around the Southeast here?
60 cents.
It's 60 cents. And over in California, it's like 80, 90 cents right. a gallon. So for every gallon of gas you put in your car, you're paying about 60 cents of that price as actual taxes. So that tells you the real cost of gasoline is pretty cheap. Electric cars, how much do they pay per gallon of fuel or electricity? Nothing. There's right. no tax.
No surcharge.
No road tax. Yeah. And that's another thing in the proposal. Oh, there's going to be a mileage tax on your tax return, probably.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it be a weird feeling if I'm pulling up into a gas station and my 15-year-old pickup truck to put gas in it, but I got to look to the side and they're spending my tax money at the federal level to put in an electric charging station for that guy who just pulled up in an $85,000 Tesla?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
I've got three basic core rules. The first is avoid losing money. My second is have your money making money when it should. And then the third rule is the return of your money is more important than the return on your money.
Gregory Ricks and Associates, 504-832-9200 or gregoryricks.com. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Investment advisory services offered through AE Wealth Management, LLC.
Mosquitoes. We know them as flying, blood-sucking pests, but did you know that mosquitoes are actually highly intelligent? They can smell human breath, our sweat helps them choose their next meal, and they use our body heat to find just the right place to bite. Outsmart mosquitoes with help from Mosquito Joe. Mosquito Joe has this time-release capsule that they spray that slowly releases its mosquito death over a course of a month. NewOrleans.MosquitoJoe.com. NewOrleans.MosquitoJoe.com.
If you've got a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory.
One of the things I'm going to find out is, what do you think you're going to need a month to continue your lifestyle? And if they're not sure, I'd say, well, what are you spending now? Because I don't think it's going to be a whole lot different. One thing I'll suggest is you need to do a little bit of homework. You need to go look at your outflow from your checking account the past 6 months. Now, sometimes people will pay their bills on a quarterly basis, or, well, I pay my insurance once a year on the house. Well, go back a year and average it out to see what you're needing to pay. And then you have a handle, because now that tells me the net number. So now we have to go back, look at your overall income need. Where does that fit in tax brackets, and get to a gross number?
Call Greg Ricks and Associates, 504-832-9200 or gregoryricks.com. Investment advisory services offered through AE Wealth Management, LLC. The Ricks Report with Gregory Ricks.
To determine if your Social Security will be subject to taxation, you have to be aware of the provisional income levels. The following forms of income figure into your provisional income calculation. And the way we get to that is one half of your Social Security income, any distributions taken out of your tax-deferred accounts like IRAs, 401ks, any 1099 or interest generated from your taxable investments, any employment income, any rental income, and get this, interest from municipal bonds. Those have to be figured in to determine if Social Security is going to be taxable.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Find us on the Winning at Life app or winningatlife.com. Investment advisory services offered through AE Wealth Management, LLC.
I believe most people are good. most mamas ought to qualify for sainthood. I believe most Friday nights look better under neon.
Happy Saturday. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. Welcome to The Money Show. I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you got a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you can call the show right now, 504-260-0995. Ask Gregory your question. He's a financial advisor. There's a very good chance he'll be able to point you in the right direction. If that's not convenient, you're busy, who knows what else is going on, download the Winning It Life app, and then you have all this financial goodness in your pocket. Because you can go back and listen to the show, the parts you miss. You can go back and listen to the Ask Gregory podcast, which is segments from the show where we cover financial topics, and you can search them based on the subject you're looking for. You can also call the show, text Gregory directly, or you can go to our partners section on the Winning It Life app and call Gregory's office directly. It'll also get you in contact with members of our Total Wealth Authority, a couple of the other sponsors that you hear on the commercial breaks. It's good stuff. Doesn't cost you anything. The Winning It Life app. John in Waveland, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, John?
Hey, good morning. I've got a piece of property. It's just raw land that I picked up on a county tax sale. So the monies that I have invested in acquiring this property, lawyer fees, so forth, now I have it for sale. I'm guessing that anything that I make over and above what I have invested in this property, I'll have to pay tax on some kind of a federal or state tax involved with it.
Yes, you're going to have to pay a tax on the gain of that. Depending on holding period, could be taxed as ordinary income or taxed as a capital gain, depending on how long you hold it. But the profit is going to be taxable.
Right. So, say for example, I've owned this property for 3 years, and basically I would just have to, I guess, show the expenses incurred for me acquiring this property as opposed to what I sell it for.
Yep, that's pretty much it. You've simplified it, and I feel that's accurate there.
Well, I had a basic understanding. I just listened to your show, and I said, let me give you a call.
Yeah. Now, always remember, get some tax help, guidance from those professionals like CPAs. We refer people to Jude Heath. He's a show contributor, and he's on our show monthly talking about those topics as well, but we work closely with him. So I'm not a CPA or tax guy, but I am in the financial world, so we understand this.
Right.
Well,
okay.
John, is this your first time? Is this your first time picking up one of these properties from a tax auction?
Actually, yes, it is.
Yeah, so we have people call on this, and they ask Gregory about it. What do they need to know before they jump into it, since this is your first go-round?
Well, it's a risk because you don't know what you're getting. Mostly I was just earning interest on my investment from people paid their taxes late. But if they don't pay their taxes over a three-year period, then you acquire the property after you pay the fees and so forth involved. But the risk is you don't know what you're getting, whether or not there's a mortgage on the property, there's any type of a lien or anything that's on it, then you just got that. So I went through a lawyer to get some issues squared away on the property to get everything clear. But I guess in reality, you could pick up a home or something that you think you're getting a good deal on that has a big mortgage, and I guess now it's your mortgage. So there is some risk involved. But mostly, I always just earn 1.5% a month off of the property until the people pay the taxes. So I did that for quite a few years.
You're braver than I am, John. That sounds like incredible amount of risk, and I hope it's working out for you. You sound like you're okay.
Yeah, well, so far, yeah. I got out of it because simply I was averaging around 10 to 12% return on my investment, which I was happy with, and I never acquired any property. I was just making the return. And then right as I got out of it, because they had brokers come in that would bid against you, and they would bid 10, 15, 20% over what the tax was, and that's just, I don't know, I guess they didn't know what they were doing. I don't know, but I got out of it. So right as I got out of it, I acquired this piece of property.
That is wild.
So
it's working out.
Look like it's going to be able to sell? Does it have marketability for resale since you own it?
Yeah, I've had many, many people look at it. Of course, I tried to put a high price on it at the beginning, and now I'm kind of bringing it down to a more realistic number. But yeah, I'm going to make a good return on this investment, but there were some issues with it that fortunately time solved that could have been a nightmare if it would have been worse. You you know, if the particular lawsuit stipulation was they had to renew the suit every 7 years. So the people didn't renew the suit after that 7 years. So that claim became null and void. So I guess you could end up with something like that. And then the money that you've invested, basically, you got a piece of property that somebody owes a bunch of money on. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what it sounds like. There can be a bunch of complications, but it looks like you pulled off a good one here and ended up in a good situation to make some money.
Yep, and it was good while it lasted, but these brokers kind of, we're just all local guys going in there investing our money, and then you had a few brokers, and there was always a kind of like a gentleman standing rule when you went, it's an auction. So generally, whenever you paid a previous year tax, most everyone in there would just, they wouldn't bid against you, they'd just let you have it again. But these new brokers that came in didn't care whether you had a previous interest in anything or not, they bid against you, and they bid stupid amounts of money in excess of 10% to 20%.
Which knocks you out of your property then.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I'm not going to bid 10% on something that I'm only making 10% on as an average. So I did it for about 10 years and I got out of it and took my money and invested it elsewhere. So, but it was good while it lasted.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing, John.
Thank you. And I know.
All right.
Thanks, John and Waveland. I know there's a lot of people that were thinking about doing this and they've seen the advertisements or seen little red websites. And I don't know where all these people are coming from, but they call the show asking about that. So now you got a little illustration of what that looks like after 10 years.
Yeah. So what he was sharing there and then, if you picked up on it, that he picked up an auction and they didn't pay the next year's tax bill. And then somebody, and then that's got to be bid on. It's, and then other bidders are coming in and pushing it up. And this is, you know, once again, when you ever, even novices get into these investment things, and that would be like going to sheriff's sales for properties that the mortgage has not been paid on, so it's going up for auction as well. And you might say, well, you know, heck, this is a rehab and this has got some problems and it's probably worth at most 100K, but then you have somebody else come in and then all of a sudden they're driving the price up 110, you know, another $20,000-$30,000 above that, and like, gosh, I can't no money fixing this and flipping it. So you've got all those dynamics come in there that skew things versus an expert. So everybody, it alters the dynamics going forward. So somebody like John, he said, you know what? I'm good. I'm out. Maybe re-enter down the road, but you know, it's when everybody finds out about it and starts pushing the prices up. And part of what we're seeing, and was having a discussion with a gentleman yesterday, and he was, you know, just talking about hard assets, and it's just people are concerned about inflation coming right now with all the stimulus out there, and they're continuing adding. And I even saw a report yesterday is like, yeah, there might be a fourth stimulus check. Why?
Right.
Why? What is unemployment? It's 6% and it's dropping every month there. It's going to be a slower go, but I don't quite get that, but we have to deal with the cards we're dealt.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're here to help you with on Winning at Life Ready.
All right. It's been over an hour since we mentioned the No Compromise webinar, and I can't let it slip because Gregory's next webinar starts on Monday. And this coming week, there's going to be one episode that's in the morning at 9:30. There's going to be one that's around lunchtime. And there's going to be one when you get off work afterwards at 6 p.m. So go to GregoryRicks.com. A little blue banner is going to pop up on the bottom of every page on GregoryRicks.com that you can click through, pick out whichever time works for you the most, and sign up for it. But who needs to sign up for this? The No Compromise webinar.
Everyone. You can be 30. You can be 78. If you're paying taxes, I'll give that. Any age and you're paying taxes and you would like to get to a point where you've zeroed out some income sources or you want to reduce overall taxes on income, getting to a point to where, why do we work and save? Well, it's so you have options later in life to dial back the working for the man, so to speak, and do more your own thing, or even choose to, you know what, I'm living off of my resources, my assets. And it could be you've got a pension, maybe a few real estate properties, as well as investments. And what we're talking about is how to reduce taxes. Because if you can reduce that, and it is something by choice, this isn't an absolute, because there's a lot, the tax code is enormous. And built in, even though the government wants more, but they've built in ways for you to save taxes. And one, you could could actually create an income that could be really large. You know, I know people that have a six-figure retirement income and have no taxes. Why? It's all Roth. And then I know other people that have a mix of things, and it still includes Roth IRAs, because you know what happens Roth IRA? The distributions from a Roth IRA account, it's not taxed. So this is what this no compromise discussion is about, and it's following our theme for this year to give you help on saving, reducing, creating efficiency with taxes.
So that's the No Compromise webinar. Sign up at GregoryRicks.com. And look, Gregory's right. You're probably not going to be interested in this if you love paying taxes or if you don't pay taxes at all. This is not the webinar for you. Everyone else?
And it might be some of you that want to pay more, and we're okay with that.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. We'll find you another webinar.
I land on the side of I want to create more efficiency.
I hear you. All right. So we took care of that. Oh, the other thing we hadn't mentioned in an hour is your Save Our NOLA restaurants and bars. This is a program that Gregory put together with his day job, Gregory Ricks and Associates, with the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation. And look, I know we keep saying Louisiana over and over, but we have just as many listeners in Mississippi and Alabama as we do in Louisiana. We'll count you if you are under the broadcast umbrella of this show. You're more than welcome to send in an application. Go to louisianahospitality.org/winning. This is a program where we're going to pick out 32 bars and restaurants. Well, 16 bars, 16 restaurants, 32 small businesses. And they're going to get a promotions package. And then so for the next 16 weeks, as soon as we wrap this up, because the last day to sign up is coming up this Friday, we will have a bar and restaurant of the week that we will highlight, and you will get a promotions package, and you will hear the commercials run during the commercial breaks on this show, and it's at no cost to these small businesses. And we can't save everybody, but we're going to see if we can at least save a few of them. Save Our NOLA Restaurants and Bars, a partnership with Gregory Ricks and Associates and the Louisiana Hospitality Foundation, louisianahospitality.org/winning.
All right, got all that caught up?
Cool.
You know, we talked a little bit about the jobs report, and then we were interrupted by a call. I just want to double check that I'm sort of done with that topic, if you didn't have anything else to add to it.
I didn't have anything, but it was good information, good numbers. We're going in the right direction.
Okay, but here's what I want that to lead into here is the context where people have been calling in over the last couple months, really since the election, saying, I'm really worried about a downturn. I'm really worried about things going south. Every time one of these jobs report comes out, we get one at the first week of every month for the most part, there's a chance for all that to turn south and have these horrible negative predictions come true. And this is not leading into that fear. What we saw in the jobs report was it wasn't a great gain. It was a modest gain, 0.2%, but things are still going in the right direction. So yes, there will be a turnaround at some point, but it seems like we can push that concern off maybe at least another month or so before we have to worry about things turning south. Is that a pretty good semi-optimistic read of the jobs report? More importantly, is what was unveiled on Wednesday, a slew of tax hikes, a lot of which could hit the middle class. The one that you just kind of brushed over with the caller earlier that I like it when you go into a little more detail about this is the standard deduction going up and the brackets going up. Because we see the headlines, no one under $400,000 is going to get a tax increase. Okay, now it's been brought down to $200,000. But if you get rid of that standard deduction, that's basically anybody who's paying anything into the tax system whatsoever will get a de facto tax increase. And I'm surprised that's not getting more attention. You're pulling something up on the laptop here?
Yeah, I'm just going, here's where we're going to. And I just pulled up the 2016 tax bracket. Standard deduction was $6,300. For a married couple filing jointly, was $12,600. What is it today? It's double that. And tax brackets were 10, 15, 28, 25, and 28%. There's four more. Let me just shift gears here and get you all the brackets. 28, 35, and 39.6%. And, you know, what was the 25% is, for example, is now 22%. But the brackets were adjusted as well. So what you're essentially going back to is taxes are going up for every bracket, and it's reverting back to the 20. It's just to simplify, it's kind of reverting back to the 2016. brackets is what you're looking at in standard deduction, knowing that if I go pull up, let me just grab another page up here to run comparison of 2021 tax brackets. And yeah, so for the 22% tax bracket, married filing jointly, that's a range of, I'm going to round it, $81,000 to $172,000. So if we go back to the other bracket of
2016,
yeah, and which bracket did I give?
$81,000.
Yeah, and that bracket for married filing jointly on the 25% is $75,000 to $151,000. So the 22 was $81,000 to $172,000. So it keeps a wider range in there, but then it's going to bounce to a higher tax bracket. And what you essentially you have is we're moving up a few percentage points there per bracket there. And that's, you know what, it's a little bit, but you know what, it adds to a lot. And the impact of the standard deduction is quite a bit as well, especially when we get into the lower brackets of, I would say, the 10 and 12%, because like the 10% is up to 19,000 and the 12% is 19,901 up to 81,000, the 22%. So all that starts incrementally moving up because we're a progressive tax system. So as each layer of income's added in, you're paying more in taxes. And that is baked into the cake. It's going back to those previous tax brackets. You don't hear them talk about, oh, yeah, we're raising taxes for the 400,000 and up households, but we're going to lock in your tax reduction. They don't have to discuss that or anything. And honestly, they're wanting that to happen sooner than later, but we know that's coming. Now, if they let that lie out there, that means for most people, we have the opportunity to do some planning, get some things done, take advantage of your margins. Margins meaning how much room is left in your tax bracket to create some efficiency. So in the last 30 years, the best performance for the S&P 500 occurred over the one-year period that ended this past Wednesday, March 31st of 2021. The S&P 500 gained 56.4%, and that's a period of March 31st of 2020 through March 31st of 2021. The year of the pandemic has given the market its best 12-month return in the past 30 years. Pretty awesome. April also, let's talk about April. We're in April now. April has been the number one best month for the S&P 500 index over the last 30 years. That's going from 1991 through 2020, gaining an average of 2.17% total return. The month of November average gain of 1.92% has been the second best performing month over the last three decades. How about that?
Well,
April's and November are good months.
We kind of know what the backstory is behind those. If think about it, April happens to be, March happens to be when the market bottomed out for the financial bubble bursting in 2008 and 2009. So March 2009 was at the very bottom of that trough. And for the pandemic freakout that happened last year, March was the very bottom of that trough. So April's just been the beneficiary of a couple of really bad Marches. And then you could say something similar in November. For November, that's been the case where there's been a few elections here where we thought everything was going to go bad, and then the election results came in and the market took off that month, at least initially. So there's some pretty obvious explanations for that, but good for April. I wouldn't have guessed that.
I'm working on getting up some of the write-in questions for the show.
Oh, did we have some text from the Winning It Life app?
We have some people reaching out.
Because when Gregory goes to his laptop, there's two ways you can get a question to his laptop. Number one, if you download the Winning It Life app, there's a text button on the front screen. You click that, a little thing pops up. You sure you want to send this text, you put it in, it goes. It converts to an email and gets sent to him. But you can also use the classic email version, info@gregoryricks.com. info@gregoryricks.com. Emails. People still use those. All right,
okay.
Go ahead.
Hey, Janie has sent in a question this morning. I am a widow over 70, still working. I do not have any debt. Is it too late to start an IRA or a Roth IRA? Or should I seek stocks, savings, and other investments? Well, once again, she's over 70 and still working. The key there of still working is she has earned income. And under the new IRS rules regarding IRAs, she can contribute regardless of her age to an IRA. It used to be you couldn't do so once you reached age for required minimum distributions. That would kind of cease it.
That whole 70 and a half thing.
Yeah. So basically, if you reached age 70, no, you couldn't contribute to an IRA or a Roth account any further. And the key to that, regardless, is you have to have earned income to match the amount of the contribution. So yes, you can continue saving, whether it's to a deductible IRA, contributory IRA, or a Roth IRA. Now, go to the part two of the question. You should, or should I seek stocks, savings, and other investments? I think it's kind of all the above, but there's a disconnect by the way the question's asked. Nothing wrong with the question, Janie, just the way you're asking it. You know, if I can't do an IRA, should I seek stocks? Well, if you're putting money in an IRA, what is that investment inside of that IRA going to be? Is it, say, an interest type savings, or is it stocks, or is it bonds? Is it mutual funds? Is it ETFs? Because remember, IRAs, whether it's a traditional IRA, deductible or non-deductible, or a Roth, that is a tax classification. So inside of that IRA, you have to make investment decisions. The IRA is not an investment. It's a tax qualification of the account. Is it qualified or is it not qualified? So when I talk about qualified, that's like your 401k, 457, 403b on company plan type accounts, or is it an IRA or is it a Roth? Those are qualified accounts too. Why are they qualified? Because they have preferential tax treatment for a period of time. So if it's not an IRA or not a Roth account, then it is non-qualified, because the IRA and a Roth account is a qualified account. So not an IRA is a non-qualified account. So if you're going to just set up a non-qualified account, another way to define that, that is after-tax savings account. That means you've already paid taxes and that money's sitting in your savings account. Or is it sitting in your brokerage account? It's an after-tax account because it's come through your payroll, you pay taxes, that's in your bank account. Okay, I've got excess money, I need to invest it somewhere. So you're asking, should I do it through savings, which is, say, an interest-bearing type of instrument, or should I seek stocks or other investments? Well, you're doing the same thing with it inside of an IRA. Are you doing savings, stocks, or other investments? So now that I've cleared the water on how all that works, we still have to make investment decisions. So Janie, then you need to look at, what is your risk? What is your timeline? Because one thing about, say, using stocks or other risk choices is the markets move up and down. And I've got some numbers here that when we come back from the break, I'm going to cover a little bit of history cycles to help you with that. So that's why it's important. If you're wanting to put money in stocks or investments that correlate to risk, how long are you going to do that for? And in the meantime, it's going to move up and down. It's the downside that's the problem for us. So what would be your tolerance? That's why you kind of need to have a risk number. Or if the market dropped 20% next month, how are you going to react? How is that going to impact you? In the short term, it's going to impact you. In the long term, it's probably will be looked back as an opportunity to put more in. But if you're taking income and not working, that's even more important question, because that is affecting your asset value and you're taking distribution. So think about that way. It was a great question as far as should, you know, and at the core, she might think I didn't answer the question, but she has the opportunity to do qualified investing, whether it's an IRA or a Roth. She said she makes about $80,000 a year, and she's already doing some saving and investing, but asked if she should add to an IRA or a Roth account. And I think she should really consider that, depending on how much she's able to save, to put it in to get some tax-deferred growth or tax-free growth. Being age 70, she says, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to save. I don't know either. Depends on your health. You might have another 10 years, but it might be 5. But if her health is good, and assuming it is, so I would look that you I would look, what's the short range? You probably have 5 years to do contributions. You might have as many as 10, and it's subject to your occupation and need for that occupation and need for you in that occupation. And if you have some control of it and health stays good and you're having fun, why stop? Because you're going to need, and here's one reason, how much money am I going to need for retirement? Here's the answer. As much as you can say. Well, how long is it going to last? Well, it's going to depend on how much you use and how much you have. Well, when should I start saving that much? Today. You know, just understand those are core things. There's no easy answer. Is you're probably going to need more than you think. So time in versus timing. The split between up and down time periods for the S&P 500 from 1950 to the end of 1920. That's the last 71 years. As measured by days up, by days, the market was up 54% of the time and down 46% of the time. If we measure it by months, in the market over 71 years. If you're going to look at it monthly, the market's up monthly 60% of the time, down 40%. If you measure it by quarters, it's up 67% of the time, down 33% of the time. Years, measuring it by years, the market's up 73% of the time, down 27% of the time. Let's take a call.
Okay, Stacy and Kenner. I'm sorry, Sherry in the Facebook Live, we'll answer your question after we talk to Stacy and Kenner. I just feel bad because I told her in Facebook Live message she's next, but actually it's going to be Stacy. How can we help you, Stacy?
Hi. I was just wondering, so my mom is retired and she has SSI, and then she also draws from her husband, who was a military veteran who passed away. She also gets his VA every month. And then I was wondering, recently her ex-husband, who she was married to for 20 years, passed away, and I was told that she can possibly draw his from retirement as well.
What is her age, Stacy?
She is 77.
She could draw off. So we've got two deceased husbands, right? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay. She can draw off of whichever's going to get her the largest benefit is the case. So the answer is yes. So she can draw.
Okay. So how would she be able to find out how much the husband who recently passed away, how would she be able to find out what that benefit would be to see if it's higher?
She's going to need to reach out to Social Security. She's going to need to have proof of marriage and possibly divorce documents as well, but she's going to need proof of that relationship. And then with that proof, they're going to give her, they will adjust her benefits if that would improve her benefit. They absolutely will.
Okay. Whichever one is higher, that's the one that they'll give her.
Correct. Absolutely.
But they don't automatically do this. This is something we have to contact them for.
Yeah. Now, there's a little bit of fine print there. She needed to have been married to that person for 10 years. That's an important part to throw in there. But if she was married to them for 10 years, that's, and each of them, and then one passed while they were married, right?
Correct. Yes.
So she's eligible from drawing benefits from him as well. Has she been doing so?
Yes. Been getting those.
Okay.
But
the other might give her more. So definitely reach out to Social Security. Help her with that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Winning at Life. That's a great question.
Perfect question there, Stacy. You got a similar question, 504-260-0995. Anything you want to add before we get to this?
No, we're running out of time. We got another hour in the show, but we have a break coming up in a few minutes.
This comes from the Facebook Live feed. By the way, if you go to the Facebook Live feed and you're watching, if you send a comment, it will pop up on the screen we have here in the studio so we can monitor it. Sherry asks, I will be inheriting qualified and non-qualified annuities. How will that be handled from a federal tax? All right. First off, just explain to the new guy. What's the difference?
Qualified annuities, meaning it's an IRA. That's a qualified annuity. A non-qualified annuity means it is not an IRA. So it was in money that was put into it was after tax money, and then it grows tax deferred. So the non-qualified has a cost basis, meaning after tax dollars were put into that. Let's say that a non-qualified annuity has a value of $100,000. And let's say it's cost basis, meaning money put in was $50,000. So the growth of $50,000 is taxable when that money comes out. On a non-qualified annuity, it doesn't have to move until 5 years are up. You've got 5 years to make a choice of that. You can let that annuity ride for 5 years, but at the end of 5 years, that money has to come out and taxes paid on that gain in that account. You could do that now. And once again, again, the gain in the account is taxable as ordinary income, but you have 60 months to get that done. On an IRA, essentially what's happening is that if it's a, do we know the, in the notes there, she's inheriting a qualified annuity. So we don't know if that's a spousal or if that's from a mom or dad, but let's assume she's a non-spouse Benny. So basically that can be changed to a beneficiary IRA. It can be retitled to that as a Benny IRA, meaning she's not a non-spouse, but she's not a spouse, but she's a non-spouse beneficiary. So required minimum distributions are going to start the year after death. And there's a formula for those where so much has to be taken out, and that is a taxable event that occurs each year. Now, if you cash those annuities and then want to put it into a inherited IRA account, you can't do so. So it's got to be transferred to you properly without creating an all-at-once taxable event. So, and I, let me back up. On a non-spouse Benny, it's not RMDs. You actually, the rules changed on that. That's how it was. But actually, you can change that to an inherited IRA account. But you, as a non-spouse beneficiary, you have 10 years to take that money out of the account. Year 10 has an RMD of 100% of the value of the account. So neither of them have an immediate taxable event or forcing you to do something. So the difference between the two, the qualified account, you have 10 years to take the money out, and non-qualified, you have 5 years to take the money out. So hopefully I cleared that up. Are you?
Lewis in Madisonville, you've been chosen. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I have a retirement plan at work where I'll get a monthly annuity check and then I'll have Social Security. My wife is a public school teacher in Louisiana and she's nearing retirement, but she doesn't have enough quarters to qualify for Social Security. So my main question was, does she have any survivor benefits on my Social Security if I die before she does?
She, and you're speaking of, once again, if you pass, die before she does, right? Would she get any of your covered benefits, Social Security covered benefits? And she does not have 40 quarters, so technically she doesn't qualify for that. However, they will not reduce the survivor benefits by more than 2/3 of her uncovered pension benefit. Does that make sense?
Okay.
They're going to protect. Yeah, they're going. She's going to get some. She's just not going to get the full benefit. So they won't. They will not reduce it by more than 2/3 of her covered benefit. And actually, that's a pretty fair thing that they do on that regarding the widow situation. I go to the core part of the windfall elimination provision and knowing how they do that, where somebody's receiving spousal benefits and such off of their working spouse, and say they have a combination work history of working for covered and non-covered job. A covered job means they're having Social Security withdrawn from their check. Non-covered means they're not participating in Social Security benefits. So if somebody's receiving a spousal benefit or children's benefit from a Social Security recipient, those benefits they will be eligible for, but they're going to be the reduced benefit because of the windfall elimination provision there. So it's important to understand how that works. Now, of course, when that worker dies, windfall elimination provision goes away from them and they would receive widow's benefits actually and children's benefits off that from the actual work record from that benefit. So, and then in the case of that caller having a spouse that had a work history that was covered and they are under that mix where they're being impacted, you know, there is a limit to how much that will be reduced on that benefit. And far as a worker themselves that are covered under that, they're kind of protected as well because they're not going to be impacted no more than 50% of their uncovered benefit will impact their covered benefit. See, once again, That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot to unpack right there.
Another quick comment we had from today's from this week's shows that I want to introduce into the topics that we're talking about today. This one comes from William in Covington. William in Covington, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, William?
How do we determine what inflation is going to be over the next 10 years in light of the government spending that we're seeing?
All right, so that was the entirety of the question I want to throw at you. We know inflation's coming. How much can we expect and how do we prepare for it? We've been getting this a lot, Gregory.
You have to continue saving. And ultimately, being that's an unknown, is we're going to see near-term inflation. We're seeing hard assets move up. Real estate is moving up in price as well. And I was just looking at a Wall Street article that was showing, in February, the median existing home price rose 15.8% from a year earlier to $313,000. But even with house prices rising quickly, many homeowners are reluctant to sell. They worry about competing for another home in the same market. You know, where some people have the thought of like, oh, what? My house is worth this. I should sell it. Okay. Are you looking to buy another home? Because you're going to pay more for it. You know, are you in the house flipping business or the homeowner business? I just want to be a homeowner. Well, be careful in taking that profit because you're going to have to pay somebody else some profit to get the next home. So we're going to see near-term inflation and some impact on home ownership is the price per 1,000 board feet of lumber. It cost, you know, neighborhood of $1,000, where a year ago we were paying about $300 to $330 per 1,000 board feet. So we're talking triple in prices. And we're seeing other things go up across the board. What part of that is demand. And housing has created a demand. Why? Not as many houses being built. One, because it costs more to build a house. At $1,000 per 1,000 board feet, make sure I got all my thousands in there. You know, that causes the average home, price of building the average home has gone up by $16,000. So you could see the impact of that. So if prices didn't move up to adjust for that, you know, builders aren't going to build because they're not making any money. Somebody has to absorb that price increase and it's not going to be the builder.
David in Destrehan, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, David?
Hey, gentlemen. I just calling. I know Gregory had mentioned about upping his life insurance. I'm in my mid-30s now, trying to think about what kind of insurance needs I may have. And I was just curious if there's anybody, maybe it's your firm or anybody in particular, the Total Wealth Authority that handles or you do recommend dealing with as far as insurance matters go.
My team will help you with that. And basically, if somebody came in and having a discussion on that, we would find out what's going on, get the proper information to give you guidance. And then essentially, we would shop for that. You're young. And it, once again, assuming you're healthy with the age that you are, term insurance can be really inexpensive. If you've got a home, wife, few kids, you might not have a lot of excess money, but you probably have a need for more coverage than you think. And through term insurance, you can carry quite a bit for a few dollars. I'm kind of generalizing it, but it's not going to be super expensive. And then life insurance kind of changes through different phases in life. And in the older age, and say somebody over 60 or 70, it might be more estate planning purpose or part of their income plan to create tax-free income, where at some point it might be to pay off debts. Or it's kind of like at a young age, if you've got a home and something happens to you, I don't want them to have to worry about a mortgage. At least carry enough to cover that. If you're kind of saying, well, I want to make sure the house is paid off and a portion of my income's replaced. Well, you might need $1,200,000 to pay off the house, and $1 million at 4% creates $40,000 a year income. When you understand that, you're not leaving your spouse rich. Oh, they could be rich for a short time if they want to spend it, but from income capability, that's not a lot, is it, David?
Okay, great point. Appreciate the time. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, awesome.
Thank you very much, David. All right, I love that call and that whole topic because what David was asking you is what one of the first financial questions I asked you when we met almost 11 years ago. How much life insurance do I need? I was in his situation. I was in my 30s. I was a newly married guy. I didn't have kids yet. And I had never worried about life insurance before because if I died, whatever. I didn't have anyone else to take care of. But now that I do, it came on my plate. How much do I need?
It depends on how you view it. At the core, if you're looking for amount to solve problems like pay off the house, pay off the cars, pay pay off credit cards, you know, and then what about income beyond that? If it's just you and your spouse and something happens to you, how do you want to leave that situation? And you gave us a stat earlier last week or the week before. Girl, what's the average age of widows?
Oh my goodness.
You sprung that on us, so I let you roll with it.
Yeah, because I fell out of my chair when I read it. The average age of widowhood begins for women at 55.
I know. I like you presenting because you were so stunned by that. It didn't surprise me at all. I was actually 1 year higher. I was going to say it was age 56, but it's 55, right?
That was an incredible guess because I would have said 60 something easily.
Yeah, but and where people don't think about it, like, oh my God, you know, I'm not going to die. I don't need that. It's not going to happen to me. Yeah, may not. But if it does, what are you leaving behind? And in that situation, and what we're wanting is, yeah, and you define it as a low risk. Okay, but that's why you should carry life insurance. Let's see, what's the risk of you wrecking your car, James? What's your history? You wrecked like car every couple years or something?
I don't get in car wrecks. That's something other people do.
Yeah, something other people do. So it's very low, but yet you carry car insurance.
Well, you taught me the flip side on, of course, the risk of you dying over the next 5 years is extremely low. So let's go look up the rates. That's why it's this cheap.
Yeah.
And so I forgot what the original premium was. It was like 25 something dollars for...
But you could carry different types of coverage depending on how long you're on. Because if you say, well, James, what is the chances of you dying at age 80? Dramatically higher. Doesn't mean that's the end of your life expectancy, but it's not a long ways beyond that. It's probably your life expectancy is probably 89, 90 or something. If we kind of put a year to it, but we say, well, it's a heck of a lot likely higher of you dying at 80 versus age 40. So yeah, it's going to cost less. But if you're wanting to price it for 40 to 50, it's not going to cost much in the grand scheme of things. Or from 40 to 45, it's low cost. Now, when you start saying, well, I would like coverage for the next 30 years. Okay, so what we're going to do is levelize that for you. Or you could get a graded premium life insurance, meaning we'll price it for you in five-year periods, but each five-year period, it's going up. But we'll go ahead and lock it in for you for the next 30 years or 40, however long you want to do that. Or say, no, I'm good. I just want the next 5 years covered. I'll deal with the renewal, and it's guaranteed renewable. But what you're kind of saying, I'm really not worried about beyond that. Like a graded premium, we'll just go ahead and lock it in as a guarantee. You're going to say, well, yeah, I'll get, but I'm probably going to want to reshop. I don't know. Hey, I might think I don't need it. Or you could come in and say, I want to lock in the price and make sure I have it for the next 30 years. Well, what you're doing is you're factoring in all those mortality years and you're going to levelize it. That would be more like buying a universal life with the premium set up for it to start, last for 30 years. We don't want excess cash value because you're kind of saying, yeah, I'd like it to run out in 30 years. So you're levelizing it. A premium for something like that's going to cost a good bit more than getting, say, a 5 or 10 year term insurance only. Or you're saying, you know, I want something that covers me to age 100. I don't have to worry about it. If I die at some time, it leaves behind to family, friends, whoever I want to leave it to over the next, you're 40. I'm going to use you as the guinea pig here. Over the next 60 years, say you're age 40, the next 60 years you're wanting the coverage for. Yeah, that's going to cost quite a bit more. And yeah, I would like money back. Say, build it to where I get 50% of the premium back at age 65 if I want to opt out of it. So what you're talking about is building a cash value. You could do it like whole life, means everything's locked in. I'll know what my values are if I cash out at any time, but I have coverage from now on. And I'm willing to pay for the premium from now on. Or you could say, no, I want coverage for 60 years, but I only want to pay premium for 30 years. Okay, so that's a whole nother situation. That probably going to cost more as well. Or you could worry about, well, I've got kids, you know, that range in 5 to 12 years old. And so I've got college, got mortgage. I kind of need coverage for the next 20 years. So you could look at life insurance that way. Then later in life, you could look at insurance a different way, that maybe we're short. If something happens to me before I get the retirement plan in place, I want to make sure it's fixed up for Sherry. And so you might have life insurance for that purpose. Or you might have life insurance a little later than that, saying, you know, I want want to create tax-free income for retirement. I want to put money away. I filled up my IRA. I filled up my 401k every year. I've got excess money. Can I create something else that gives me income for retirement? And can it do it tax-free as well? Or it might be another situation is, gosh, you know, I came up with this idea and, you know, next thing you know, I woke up, I'm worth $300 million. I'm needing some life insurance to solve taxes because I want Uncle Sam getting all my money when I leave it behind because I'm not living forever, but I would like this to continue on instead of Uncle Sam crush it. See, then there's another purpose for life insurance, and it has different purposes, different pricing, and situational to cover. Need some help? Yeah, my team at my day job, yeah, they can help you with that and more.
All right, I want to remind you, Gregory's next episode in his webinar series starts on Monday. There's a couple more episodes this week. Find one that fits in your schedule. It's called a No Compromise webinar, and it's all about dealing with taxes in retirement. And if you're concerned about what your tax hit is going to be and you want to keep that as low as possible when it's time for you to start drawing money off your assets, this is the webinar for you. Go sign up at GregoryRicks.com. For all other financial questions, you can call the office directly at Gregory Ricks & Associates, 504-832-9200. The website's GregoryRicks.com. Your home away from the show is the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is an independent financial services firm that utilizes a variety of investment and insurance products. Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.